Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin devoted his 2014 State of the State Address to Vermont's opioid crisis. He was inspired to do this, at least in part, by a documentary film, The Hungry Heart, which was made by Bess O'Brien. The speech in that film changed the conversation about opioid addiction in Vermont. Another outcome of this focus on addiction was O'Brien's establishment, along with Gary Miller, of Writers for Recovery. It's a project that runs writing workshops for recovering addicts. Since its inception in 2014, the group has hosted the workshops, public readings, trainings, and presentations at recovery centers and correctional facilities all across Vermont. Joining me now to discuss Writers for Recovery is Gary Miller. Gary, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me to talk to you today. Really appreciate it.
We're very happy to have you. Listeners, if you'd like to talk to Gary about the program, ask him questions, you can give us a call, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can always email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Gary, I gave a vague description of Writers for Recovery in my intro, so please, gussy it up. Give us a fuller, more accurate one.
Sure, thank you.
Sure.
Writers for Recovery, we're a small group of people who give writing workshops to people in recovery from substance use disorder and other, you know, kind of disorders, eating disorders, things like that, or, you know, as I like to say it, everybody's in recovery from something, and we don't ask. We just invite people to come, you know, to our workshops and tell their story and get heard. And we have been active in Vermont now. I believe we're coming into our seventh year, and it's been
wow.
It's been just amazing. We started out working in one site just in Burlington, and now we are funded mostly through Department of Corrections, which we really appreciate. We've done a ton of work in the correctional facilities across Vermont, and we work a lot in recovery centers. We've been in schools. We've just been all over, and now with Zoom, our reach is expanding. So,
oh, outstanding. I mentioned who, you and Bess O'Brien, but how and why did it get started?
You know, it got started, Bess did the film, The Hungry Heart, and it involved mostly people from up in the St. Albans area. And, you know, at the time, there was still a really heavy stigma, and there still is, of course, but it's less so with opioid use. And people came to tell their stories, which was a brave thing. And so Bess wanted to give something back to them. And she set up a six-week arts workshop at the Turning Point Recovery Center in St. Albans, and we did writing, I'm trying to remember, black and white film photography, theater, and radio production for 6 weeks. And we thought it would just be a one-off, and it was really fun. And then later on, someone came to Bess and said, hey, we heard the writing part of that was really neat and really powerful. Could we fund a workshop in writing at the Turning Point in Burlington? And so we took off in Burlington, and I think I taught there every week for almost three years.
Oh, my.
And then we also just started expanding all over the state.
Well, Gary, what does writing about their experiences and their past with addiction do to help your members?
It's actually part of it is the process we use, which is to use these really short writing prompts. So I literally say, give them a prompt like a morning in my recovery. And I say, you have 7 minutes, ready, go. And the only rule is there's no way to do it wrong.
Yeah.
And so this kind of quick process just encourages people to jump in. And we tell people, you know, we don't care if it's spelled right. We don't care if the grammar's right. We don't care what style you write in. All we care about is that you say what's important to you right now. And that really encourages people to just
to just let out what they need to let out. I mean, substance use disorder involves, you know, a lot of often dishonesty, a lot of trauma, a lot of, you know, we're finding more and more that really at the core of substance use disorder, a lot of times is just trauma. Sometimes it's genetics. Sometimes we don't know why it is, but people really need to talk about it. You know, the stigma and the shame keeps people from sharing their stories, and that just makes it worse. And in Writers for Recovery, people can just come out and tell their story in a really safe, supportive environment. And another rule of our workshop is all feedback needs to be positive and supportive.
Nice.
So this isn't one of those workshops where they say, Rick, your story was boring, it wasn't funny, you broke 3 grammar rules, and your sentence structure is terrible. It's not that kind of writing workshop. It's the kind of writing workshop where we say, hey, you know, this is what I loved about your story. It was honest. It made me laugh, or it was deeply emotional for me. Mm-hmm. And more important, let's talk about the issue that you brought up in that, and let's really talk about it.
Do people
and we'll give you some support.
Are people a little reticent at first, Gary, to read what they've written? Or do they
are. Yeah. They are. But here's a rule. You don't have to read what you've written.
Well,
you can come to Writers for Recovery, and you don't even have to write if you don't want to. Just come and join us. We don't care. Just come and be with us, you know, and listen to other people's story if that's what works for you. But if you write a story, you know, you don't have to share it. People write things that are deeply personal, and sometimes they want to keep them to themselves. But I will say that over time, almost everyone ends up sharing because the environment's so safe and supportive.
Gary, you mentioned stigma of addiction, and you mentioned that it's somewhat ebbing, but it's still present. So can you talk about that stigma of addiction?
Sure. Maybe for those of your listeners out there, what do you think of when I say drug addict? You know,
mm-hmm.
There's your stigma right there. Think of it in your mind. What do you think about? And often it's a negative portrait. In the first place, you know, the use of the word addict is stigmatized. And we now say people with substance use disorder because that's what it really is.
Right.
It's a medical disorder. It's identified. It's you know, the science shows that it's there. And so, you know, we just try to by telling our stories, you know, try to eliminate that. And if you come to one of our workshops, or, you know, we do a lot of public readings, or at least we did pre-COVID, and we're really excited, we'll be doing that again. Come to one of our readings, and you'll look up at these incredible people who are great storytellers and funny and fun to be with and interesting and come from all walks of life. And that's going to change your attitude about what someone with substance use disorder is all about.
What's your background, Gary?
First of all, I'm in recovery for 24 years.
Oh.
So that's part of it. I make my living as a freelance writer and editor, which I've done, you know, most of my adult life. I'm 59 years old. So I worked in publishing in Boston. I worked in public television, writing documentaries. I'm a fiction writer. I published a collection of short stories a while back. And, you know, I make my living doing a lot of kind of business type writing for, you know, big, you know, companies and mm-hmm. writing websites and things like that. So I make my living as a writer. But I'm also, you know, Writers for Recovery is definitely a big, big part of my life. And it has been for years. I put a lot of time into it, as does Bess, who, mm-hmm. you know, God knows without her, I don't know where this whole organization would be, because she's just a genius at, you know, organizing and finding us money. And she's a great teacher. She runs a great workshop up in St. Jay for Writers for Recovery and is teaching another one online now. Yeah, that's my background, basically.
Yeah, and to give Bess a nod, every few years, I never know exactly what she's working on, and then all of a sudden there's another wonderful documentary that shines the light on something we were not aware of here in the state. and really calls attention to it. So kudos to her for all the work she's done in that regard.
And Rick, stay tuned for Listen Up, which is a statewide youth theater project that will be touring in August here in Vermont, which is just a remarkable. It's a musical that's been written by young people all across Vermont, and that's what Bess has been up to for the last couple of years.
Oh, outstanding. Thanks for that, Gary.
Sure.
You have these workshops. Who leads the workshops?
Well, they're right now, it's Bess and I, and we lead them mostly now online, actually all online. And that's been a real change for us. We were very worried at first because of the kind of intimate personal nature of our workshops, that we, you know, get together face to face with these people. And we thought, well, how can that happen on Zoom? And the answer is it can happen and be totally amazing. And actually something that we didn't anticipate is that with Zoom, people don't have to be in Vermont, although our core is still primarily Vermonters. But on Tuesdays for the last 10 weeks, I've had a workshop with people, and, you know, people have showed up from Ireland, from Toronto, from Vancouver, from Oklahoma, from New Jersey, just all New York City, all over the place, which has been really a great new thing for us. And we will probably continue to do Zoom workshops after.
Geographically, you say you started in St. Albans before the pandemic and Zoom. What other areas were you serving? You mentioned Burlington.
Right. Men's correctional facilities in St. Albans, St. Johnsbury, Newport, Springfield, Turning Point Recovery Centers, all the way down in Brattleboro, all the way up to St. Albans. I mean, when pre-COVID, I really spent a lot of time behind the wheel of my car, driving, you know, all over the place in, you know, hail and sleet and dark of night to do these workshops, and it's been really cool.
And incidentally,
I can't wait to start doing that again. It's the whole Zoom thing has been really cool in its own way, but you know, I want to see my friends, and I've made amazing friendships and met some of the most incredible people, you know, of my whole life in Writers for Recovery. And I want to see as many of these people as possible in person again.
I can hear the enthusiasm and the dedication in your voice, Gary. Gary, how many writers participate in maybe an individual workshop and overall during the course of a year?
You know, probably hundreds during the course of a year, I would guess, in all of our various activity. An individual workshop, it varies. You know, sometimes it's 3 to 5 people. The one I mentioned earlier on the Zoom workshop, we have, the other day we had 16 people,
nice.
I think.
Yeah.
And it just depends, you know. We are there for whoever shows up.
Yep. How do members show up? How do they come to you and find out about you and what you're doing?
A lot of it is word of mouth, but we tend to, when we have a workshop, we, you know, use our social media. We're online. Our website is writersforrecovery.org. Incidentally, you can find a ton of fantastic writing from people in our groups on there. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. We send out publicity through all the recovery centers. So through Recovery Vermont, which is an incredible statewide organization, supporting people in recovery all across the state. So we do the best we can to turn people out. But a lot of it is word of mouth.
And I understand you have a podcast. Tell us about that and how that came to be.
We did a podcast a few years ago, actually, with Vermont Public Radio called My Heart Still Beats.
Oh, right. Yep.
You know, that's online. We're not currently doing a podcast, but I would encourage anyone to go to BPR and check out the My Heart Still Beats podcast. Just amazing, amazing stories. And we got hundreds of thousands of downloads from all over the world, or listens, I guess, And it was just a really incredible project, and we're very grateful for BPR for inviting us on board to do that.
All right, Gary, and it's legit. So I can let you pump the tires of another radio station for that. Well done.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it. Yeah.
All right, and they do fine
not
work.
Not that we don't love WDEV, because we've been on a number of times, and we totally love you guys. So
all right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Spread the love, Gary. Well done. Okay. Hey, you have your fifth anthology coming out, I believe, this summer or fall. So tell
That's
us a little
right.
bit about that.
Yeah, so we had put out an anthology every year prior to COVID, and this one, when we had planned our fifth one to be a big gala affair, we actually have rolled out each anthology with a big party and some live music and a big book publishing party, and it's been, you know, just fantastic. And we had hoped to do it last year, and of course, you know what happened. Mm-hmm. I don't have to say it, really. But we're going to bring it around this year, and we're going to publish a great anthology with tons of work from people all over the state, and now I guess all over the world, and some greatest hits from previous anthologies, and we'll keep you posted on that.
Oh, that's outstanding. The Lullaby Project, what is this, and how does that involve Writers for Recovery?
Lullaby Project is an amazing, amazing project that was originally started at Carnegie Hall in New York City. And what it involves is one lullaby project already with people at the Lund Family Center in Burlington. And what we did was to get together with new and expecting moms in recovery or living, you know, the Lund Family Center is a transitional housing facility for, you know, moms who are homeless or in recovery. And we went up there and we worked with these moms and with Scrag Mountain, an amazing contemporary classical group in Vermont, to work with these moms to write lullabies for their new and yet to be born children. And then Scrag Mountain did a 4-town tour performing these lullabies. So we are looking forward to doing at least two more episodes upcoming. We got some funding from the Vermont Community Foundation to bring some programming to the Northeast Kingdom. And so we're going to bring the Lullaby Project to the Northeast Kingdom. Mm.
Gary, I'm getting a little teary. That's really beautiful.
It was amazing. I wish you could have been there. It was just fantastic, the whole thing.
You touched on this a little earlier, I think. Does the state have any involvement in Writers for Recovery?
Yes, we're funded through Department of Corrections, which we greatly appreciate. They're the bulk of our funding, and we really, really appreciate the support that they've given us over the years, and also the access, the ability to come into the correctional system and meet these guys who really want to, you know, work and turn their lives around and, you know, be a part of that, which is incredible.
Yeah, tell us what that's just like. You know, that's a really amazing outreach. But, you know, I'm not sure, you know, that's for everybody to go into a correctional facility and sit down and work with someone like you do. So tell us what that experience is like.
It's absolutely incredible. I've met some of the most unbelievably, you know, decent, humane, intelligent, wonderful people who, you know, made bad choices in their lives for any number of reasons, including substance use disorder, and, you know, have ended up in a correctional facility. And the guys, by and large, who come to work with us are the guys who really want to turn it around and really want to change their lives. And they're earnest, they're open, they have huge, big hearts, and they want to tell their stories just like anyone does. And it's just been, you know, I got to say it. I feel like that's changed my life in a big way.
Now, I know
so shout out to Corrections for letting us do that.
I think that's brilliant. You mentioned earlier that you know, no matter how someone writes, it doesn't worry. Don't worry about the grammar. Don't worry about the spelling. But you give them a prompt and ask them to write, and they're great storytellers. But there are some people who would much prefer just vocalizing their story and not necessarily writing it down. Do you allow for that?
In general, it's not that we don't allow for it, but that the whole process is so supportive around writing, and that's what it's really about. You know, right now, people in recovery have so many different options to pursue their recovery, which is just really great. There's Phoenix, which is recovery, you know, through doing CrossFit and exercise. There's, you know, traditional 12-step programs. There's Writers for Recovery. Writers for Recovery recently had a songwriting group, you know, so there are outlets, and, you know, we feel like the people who find us are the ones who want to use writing as an outlet.
Gotcha.
That's not to say if someone said, you know, hey, I have something I want to tell you guys and whatever, you know, we would say, no, you can't say that because we don't really have a lot of rules,
right.
Frankly.
Yeah.
But we're mostly about writing.
I got it. All right. And what goals do you have for the group going forward?
We want to continue to grow. And we are growing. As a matter of fact, I want to say, I forgot earlier to mention that we did add another amazing teacher to our group, Ben Hewitt, who you might know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Fantastic writer, is now a Writers for Recovery workshop leader. He's a brilliant guy. He's got a huge heart, and he's really into this. And he's now a teacher with us. Forget I said the word teacher. We're not teachers. We're leaders of the workshop because they're teaching us. Our participants are teaching us. Anyway, Ben Hewitt, today I'll be training a teacher who works at the Killington School in Killington, who's going to be leading workshops in Rutland area for us. Our writers are reaching out to the world through things like literary magazines. Drexel University is featuring us in their upcoming edition of their literary magazine, which we're very excited about. But we're working now to try to get certified to teach in New Hampshire prisons or correctional facilities. So we're really trying to, you know, just keep growing. And obviously, you know, we need to keep fundraising, and that's a hard thing. But we hope that we will, you know, find the funds we need to just keep growing.
Well, well done. Congratulations. Gary Miller is the creative director of Writers for Recovery. Their website is writersforrecovery.org. Gary, it was great having you on the show today.
Hey,
thanks so much.
Can I say one more quick thing before
sure.
I go?
Yep.
Happy birthday, Anne. I told my friend Anne, who's in Writers for Recovery, I'd wish her happy birthday. If you're out there listening, have a great birthday.
Well done. I'm glad you got that in.
Thanks
Gary.
I'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. Okay, take care. All right, we're going to take a break for a CBS News update. When we return, we're going to head down Dorset Street, South Burlington, stop in at the Mill Market and Deli. And don't forget, the Sox and the Tigers. We're going to begin coverage at 12:10, first pitch at 1:10. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Mother's Day is May 9th. Time to celebrate that special woman in your life. Treat her with a card or gift from the almost world-famous Warren Store. Our Rockin' Deli will be offering a special grab-and-go meal, or you can wine and dine her at the Pitcher Inn, our sister property across the street. They are offering a special Mother's Day brunch and dinner. Check out our websites, warrenstore.com and pitcherinn.com. Make it a day trip to quaint and beautiful Warren Village. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Open daily, 7:30 to 5.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. The name Chittenden has always been associated with Vermont history. Following the Revolutionary War, in which he famously fought, Thomas Chittenden became the state's first governor in 1778, served for the better part of 20 years. His son Martin held the same office in the early 19th century. Later, the name Chittenden was better known for farming, both dairy and apple farming. In South Burlington, the Chittenden Cider Mill has long been synonymous with apples, cider, and donuts. While members of the Chittenden family still have a presence along that same stretch of Dorset Street, the business was reinvented as the Mill Market and Deli in recent years and has been under new management since 2018. Today, Jim McCarthy, who co-owns the Mill Market and Deli with his wife, Antonia Cavalier is with me. And Jim, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm good, good.
Good.
Stay out.
All right. Listeners, if you've got a question for Jim or if you want to share a memory of the cider mill or the mill market, you can join us by calling 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Jim, give us a quick tour of the market.
Sure, sure. So, yeah, we have a lot of things going on here in our small little market. So we have in our market, you know, we have a selection of, you know, some artisan meats and cheeses, and then some standard grocery stock, a really great beer selection, and wine selection. In our deli, we like to feature all, local deli meats that we, procure and then cook all in-house, on our, locally made bread or in-house made bread. In the summer, we serve creamies, and we just last year, started serving in a dairy-free creamy that we make in-house as well, and we're actually working with UVM later to develop a little bit better version of our vegan creamy. Mm. And then we also have the cider mill, which you were talking about earlier, and that scaled way back. We really just do it to produce cider in the fall from local apples. We actually partner up with a local nonprofit, Common Roots. They pick the apples for us from a rehabbed Larkin Orchard that's right over the hill from us, and so they pick all different types of apples. Each batch of cider is a little bit different. We have heirloom apples going there. It's really kind of exciting. So they pick the apples for us. We press it. We give them some cider. We have some cider for the store. So it's a really great relationship. And then we also have our catering business, which we cater any type of events, weddings, corporate events, lunches, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, well, what made you decide to take on this business?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I'm a chef by trade, and I was at the Shelburne Farms. I was there for 11 seasons and executive chef for 4 seasons. And my wife got really sick of me not being home all the time. She said, "You know, if you're going to work this hard, why don't we look for a business to buy together?" And she kept looking around and found this place that was for sale. It was right in South Burlington. I was like, "Oh, that's great. It's perfect. It gets me out of the kitchen, so I don't have to be there till 11 o'clock at night every day."
Yeah.
You know, have more of a daytime gig, which we're certainly working a lot of hours, but at least we're out home by, you know, at the latest 7:30.
Oh, that's great. What are some of the steps that you've taken to put your signature on the mill market in Delhi?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we totally rehabbed all the deli meats and sandwiches. We have some nice signature sandwiches, kind of like chef-inspired sandwiches. We do really everything from in-house. So from our aioli or mayonnaise, we make in-house. Mm. And all of our deli meats that I mentioned, we do in-house as well. And one of the things that we like to really do is kind of like, I'm a educated chef by trade, and I really like to teach staff. So one of the things that's really exciting is that, like, every staff member that comes in here, they learn how to make an aioli from scratch. So that's one thing that they're going to take with them forever and ever. So we really like to kind of help the staff grow. We get a lot of young people in here, see where the food comes from, you know?
I love that idea. What is what are the roles that you and your wife have? How do you split up the work duty there?
Well, not well defined, but in general, she'll do more of the storefront. She brings in the sort of like retail products and has really upped our kind of our country store vibe. So she's got a lot of gift products coming in, some unique candies. We have a little penny table candy. And then she just kind of the back of house stuff, payroll and keeps the numbers in check. I do a little bit of everything. The day to day, I'm sort of running the shop. I was cooking for a while, and I still am, but we just hired a chef last September, and he's really taken our grab-and-go meals in the store to the next level and has a consistent, you know, full case all the time. So it's been really nice to be able to take that somewhat off my plate and focus on other things.
I know you've got some beautifully made fresh soups there in the grab-and-go. What else would somebody find there?
So our standards are pretty much what you're going to find almost every day. Our Messina Old Turkey pot pies that we make in-house. Mm. They're really wonderful with a garlic rosemary crust. We do a shepherd's pie with local La Platte River farm ground beef, topped with olive oil potatoes, so it's dairy-free. And then an array of our quiches. There, you know, we have about, you know, 8 to 10 different flavors that we have in rotation, you know, from chorizo and salsa to your classic ham and cheddar, and anything, and any other thing, type of things. And we try to keep things seasonal. So, you know, you might see some specials pop up. You're probably going to get a fiddlehead one going on soon. It's that season.
Oh, yes, it is. Love that. Now, you mentioned this cider operation, a bit scaled back from what it was. You still do some cider. What about the cider donuts?
Cider donuts are, we do them year-round. You know, in the not off-season, so any time outside of September and October, we do them probably, like, you know, 2 to 4 times a week, depending on demand. They're usually always available, but we do run out from time to time. And then in the fall, September and October, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, like, people go crazy for cider donuts. And yep, it's probably the hardest season for me because I'm the one making all the donuts, or I have been. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I get up, here by 4 and making donuts until 11, package it up, get them in the store, get them delivered in a few, local stores around here. But it's a lot.
I understand. Oh my. Yeah, I've been doing the morning show for the last, 6 or 7 months. And so I can give you a wake up call if you'd like around 3. Make sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Or you can do the reverse.
Well, if you make a detour up this way, you can grab a hot one right off the press.
Oh, there's nothing better than that. Oh, that'd be great. All right. And, you know, as you mentioned, you were the chef at Shelburne Farms for many years. First of all, you know, tell people what it's like to be a professional chef, because it seems somewhat glamorous, but it is a lot of really hard work.
It is. It's a lot of hours, and it's demanding. Everyone wants something different, especially now there's, you know, we're doing events. You know, you're cooking food for 100 people, and there are at least, you know, a half dozen different dietary requirements. So trying to, like, make a menu to cater for all these people is really tough, but it's something that we really like to try and do and make sure that if there's dietary requirements, that whatever the menu put out is mostly, you know, everyone can eat almost everything. So that's one thing. But, yeah, it is a tough kind of grueling business. You know, it's a lot of hours, a lot of work. It's rewarding in the end, and I love doing it.
And what part of that career, Jim, you know, have you been able to move right into and adapt to the work that you do at the Mill Market in Delhi in South Burlington?
Well, I think it's nice. We started, you know, just being able to do more from scratch products, you know, baking here on site, you know, making a few things, doing our, you know, our turkey pot pies. We make, you know, we pick the chickens for our chicken salad, and then the bones get turned into stock, and then the stock gets turned into, you know, the pot pie base and all of our soups.
Yep.
So really being able to see the full kind of picture, utilization of products, you know, we take, you know, we really rarely throw everything out. We, you know, even when we're slicing tomatoes for the deli, all the ends that we don't want to put on sandwiches, we'll save a little bag and put them in the freezer, and then when we get enough, we'll make a batch of marinara sauce. So really being able to kind of utilize everything, and it's one of the nice things about being a chef and doing a lot of stuff from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Jim, I want to talk about the Creamy Stand. You talked about it a little earlier, and always a favorite. I've got to learn to slow down as I'm going past the mill, because I just caught, as I got past you, that people were out. You said it opens in the summer, but I think you've already been serving up some creamies over there.
Right, yeah, we have. We've been opening up on weekends only for right now.
All right.
Well, until the season really kicks off. But, yeah, we've been looking to kind of improve our front presence as well. We have a gazebo we're going to throw out there. We just bought some games to really try and attract more people, make it like a place to kind of hang out and have some fun.
All right, so for right now, it's open on the weekends. What hours?
12 to 8.
All right. I'm going to slow down the next time. How many flavors do you have?
We have 4 flavors of creamies. We have our maple, and then we have our vanilla. We actually have some fresh vanilla beans to that. Mm. Our chocolate. And then we have a rotating oat-based flavor, which is a vegan creamy. Right now we are doing vegan maple creamies, but in the summer, we usually keep it like a seasonal rotating fruit. So we go strawberry, blueberry, peach, apple pie in the fall. So we kind of rotate through the seasons as they come.
Wow.
And then we also serve a hard ice cream as well from Island Ice Cream.
Oh, nice. A peach creamy sounds pretty wonderful. I've got to check when that week's happening. I would guess that maple's still the favorite there at the creamy stand.
Maple is the favorite. Yeah, that's our most popular one.
That's
kind of that's a Vermont thing anywhere. So
now you've got pizza night. I think is it Mondays?
Mondays. Yep, we started doing pizza night. Hot to go pizzas from 4 to 7, or our hours will be till 8, starting sometime in May. And we're doing them every Monday. You can order online. We've got some interesting flavors. One surprising one we put on there, and it's actually one of our popular ones, our kind of a big deal, which is a fried pickle pizza. We also have our rodeo, which is smoked brisket, barbecue sauce, and onion rings. That's really kind of a fun one as well.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And then in the summer, we actually also do barbecues on Sunday night. We have a big smoker, and we throw one type of protein and a set number of sides, and that's a really fun one. We started it last year as a way to help raise money for nonprofits.
Yep.
And, of course, last year was all to go. We hope to have a little bit more, like, stay and eat on site, maybe get a band at some point. But the way those work is that we partner up with local nonprofits, and they help us promote it a little bit, and then they can come and set up a stand, and they get a portion of the proceeds to all of our barbecues in the summer. So it was really a great way to kind of network, meet people, and also give back to the community.
Yeah, so that's
really
how
nice for us.
I was trying to figure out how I learned about it, and it must have been through a nonprofit. And did you do a Korean barbecue night? Does that sound
right?
We did,
yeah. We sort of have. We did a Korean, I think once or twice we did the Korean barbecue night.
Yeah, and that's what nonprofit was doing, or that was the night they had, and I saw that they were doing it, and that's what I jumped on. It was outstanding. So,
great.
What an interesting thing and fun thing that you do. Is that going to happen all Sunday nights through the summer?
Yeah, we're going to start late May. We're going to start doing our first one, and then I think we ran them through early September.
Yeah. So. All right, and you're going to try to get live music in there. Now, do you have a liquor license? Can someone sit and have a beer when they're doing this, or what's the deal?
We do not yet. I have a call out to the DLC. I'm hoping to figure out a way to do that, whether it's someone else comes and serves, or if it's just we're able to do a BYOB from the store. I don't know exactly the law, so I'm hoping to get with the DLC soon and figure that out for this summer. But if not this summer, then at some point.
Now, the pandemic has affected everybody in so many ways. So how have things, been there during the pandemic, and what kind of adjustments had to make, especially all during last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was certainly an interesting year, and it was, and especially the first few weeks, it was every day was something different. We were running around ragged, trying to figure out what to do. We first dabbled with delivery groceries, but, after a couple people ordering, calling up and ordering a bag of Doritos and a six pack of beer, we decided to just stop doing that. And we were just go with curbside instead.
Yeah.
And then we just started to do our barbecues and really focus more on last year we were trying to focus on our catering menu, and we actually put our brand new catering menu, got it online mid-February. And we had a couple weddings lined up, and then those all got canceled, and obviously we didn't even look at our catering menu until the beginning of this year. So with that kind of out of the picture, that's when we focused on our grab-and-go meals and started really cranking those up a bit. And those have been a huge success that, people can stop in on their way home. But there's a lot of development in this area. So people just kind of stop in, grab something for the family, and go home. And all they got to do is pop it in the oven, and they're ready to go.
Mm. And those are the soups, you mentioned the pot pies. What else is in there in the grab and go?
The pot pies, the quiche, shepherd's pie are standards. And then our chef kind of comes up with new things every week, We did chicken piccata earlier this week. Yesterday for Cinco de Mayo, we put out chicken and beef enchiladas.
Those look fabulous.
Oh, thanks. And then, we just kind of, it's kind of like, whatever seasonal, whatever we have on hand. So it's always kind of some of this stuff in there always changes. You know, we had fish cakes earlier this week. We've done some raviolis. It's really just kind of like, you know, whatever we need to, whatever's great looking, whatever's seasonal, and like whatever we have on hand. So it's not a very set menu. Yeah. It's always fun and changing and excellent.
I'm starting to get tired just talking to you, and I'm starting to think about running, you know, this market. You got the deli, you got the barbecues on Sunday nights, you got the creamy stand. You also have the catering division. So what kinds of functions will you cater?
So we've been looking up a whole, like, anything. So we've been, you know, my background at Shelburne Farms is a little more fine dining, so trying to get some of those weddings in there and special events. But we also have the deli, which is perfect for corporate catering where, you know, they need lunches and, you know, sandwich platters and, you know, some cold salads and stuff like that, which we haven't really seen much traction yet because I don't think that, you know, the corporate events are really, you know, no one's really gathering at offices quite yet.
Right.
We got a few here and there, but not like it used to be, and really don't know whether it's going to get back there. Then actually another one that actually helped us a lot through the year last year was we started catering for the National Guard. We were actually tapped on the shoulder to cater all the meals for the Essex pop-up facility. So we got a call on Tuesday and said, hey, could you guys feed 150 soldiers breakfast, lunch, and dinner starting Friday for the foreseeable future? And then, you know, we were kind of stressed out and didn't know what was going to happen, so you know, I just said yes and then looked at my wife and said, I don't know what I just did and we're going to have to figure this out. But that was a fun challenge. And they got, we had a bunch of chefs at that point looking for work. So all the restaurants are closed up. So I had, you know, we had a team of ex-Shelburne Farms chefs prepping food for the National Guard every day. So it was kind of a cool thing to set up. We had a complete satellite kitchen set up that was like set up, you know, in just a couple of days. So it was kind of a fun challenge, tiring, but fun.
It's the mantra of hospitality and food and beverage industry. Say yes first and then figure it out later.
Exactly.
Wow, Jim. And the barbecue, do you take that on the road? Is that part of the catering business as well?
Yeah, we do. We do barbecues. We have a big 20-foot smoker on a trailer so we can pull it up. Do pig roast right at your house. So that's one of the things we're really trying to promote as well.
Wow.
With our business, you know, getting all the, you know, just have a big old barbecue.
Yeah. And Jim, we got about a minute left, but I know one thing you mentioned kind of earlier in the meats you use in the deli, but you really do focus pretty heavily on local products.
Yeah, we try to do as much local as possible. And when we can't do local for some of our stuff, we'll try to, you know, sustainable stuff from at least regionally, you know, as much as we can.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I know you're a busy man. I absolutely appreciate you taking the time. Jim McCarthy co-owns the Mill Market and Deli in South Burlington with his wife, Antonia Cavalier. Jim, it was great visiting with you this morning. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome. We're going to break now for CBS News, and then we'll be back with open phones until 10:30, and then we'll learn about, oh, I can't wait, a blood bank for dogs. I'm super excited about that. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Mother's Day is May 9th, time to celebrate that special woman in your life. Treat her with a card or gift from the almost world-famous Warren Store. Our Rockin' Deli will be offering a special grab-and-go meal, or you can wine and dine her at the Pitcher Inn, our sister property across the street. They are offering a special Mother's Day brunch and dinner. Check out our websites, warrenstore.com and pitcherinn.com. Make it a day trip to quaint and beautiful Warren Village. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Open daily, 7:30 to 5.
All right, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. Right now is the last chance for open phones this week as we have an absolutely booked show tomorrow. So let's throw out some topics. First of all, driving pet peeves, and I'm going to have to clarify something I said yesterday for one of our very astute listeners, but I'll get to that in just a bit. Let me know what gets you boiling out there. Better to vent it here than to get all road ragey, although we all do it. I do. I swear I do. I admit. Celebrity near misses, another topic we've been talking about. I'd love to hear about one of yours. Ed has sent me one of his oh-so-close movie career opportunities. We'll read that in a few minutes, but you can call in 244-1777. 877-291-8255. Jumpstart these open phones. Let's see. You never know what you might, your call might lead to. This is very interesting. One listener, put a bug in the ear of Congressman Peter Welch yesterday. He had called, last week about this. And then when, Congressman Welch was on with me, he called to remind me and I mentioned it. It's about the 30-year absence of a commemorative Vermont U.S. stamp. And I'm pretty sure that right now there's some Welch staffer working on that very project today. So thanks to that listener. You can always call in and, you know, jumpstart something. As a matter of fact, I hope Stephen from Montpelier is listening today because Stephen the other day when I had a guest on, he mentioned blood drives and then just kind of in an offhand comment, he mentioned that he had his dog with him, and someone mentioned, do you know that your dog can give blood? Well, that started a chain reaction, and just wait till 10:30 when we find out about a dog blood bank. Yes, it's amazing. I can't believe this exists. I knew nothing about anything like this. So let's go 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And, of course, you can always email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. All right, so let's see. Let's do celebrity near miss first. Ed wrote in, and I got this just after I got off the air yesterday, so I apologize I didn't get this on right away. But Ed writes, about 22, 23 years ago, my kids were very young, and they wanted to go for a talent photo shoot in Burlington. I drove them there, and while I was waiting, the agency took random photos of people. Later on that day, Jim Carrey, who was filming Me, Myself, and Irene in Vermont, saw my photo in a pile on a table at the agency and said, quote, "I want this guy at the bar next to me when I order my beer." I love this. Jim Carrey sees a picture of Ed, says, "I want this guy at the bar next to me when I order my beer." So they called Ed and they asked him if he could be in the scene. He said, sure. So they said, come in tomorrow morning. And he was really excited. He woke up the next day and there was a phone call and they told him that the set was being moved that day to Providence, Rhode Island. And he was more than welcome to go there. Alas, he said no, and he passed up a great career in movies, or at least in being the drinking buddy of Jim Carrey in Me, Myself, and Irene. Oh, I love that so much. All right. We got a call at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Glenn is calling from Brookfield. Hi, Glenn. What's going on?
Hey, road rage.
Yeah, help me here.
Driving on the roads in Vermont.
Yep.
And you're going to work.
Yeah.
Speed limit's 50. There's a guy in front of you doing 30.
Yeah.
And he never pulls over.
Now, he's not
and
driving a tractor, right?
Lines all the way.
Oh. He's not driving a tractor. Hey, now, Glenn, now you said double lines all the way. But I thought, and boy, I better double check on this because I've been living my life like this. But I thought at one point Vermont passed a law that allowed us, when safe, to pass on double lines.
Well, that's good because I do it.
Oh, good. All right. Well, Glenn and I, we could just say right now, if there's any local constabulary or state troopers who see two different vehicles doing this anywhere in the state, it's either Glenn from Brookfield or me, Rick.
That's funny, man. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're the best. Thanks, Glenn. That makes me feel really good. All right. So here's the road ragey thing I need to get to. Where am I? Okay. Yesterday, and it was a little bit flip, but I was talking about what really gets me upset on the road, and it's usually on the interstate. And I said, I'll be driving, you know, and for the last 13.7 miles, I've been gaining on this Prius. And then I get within, 200 feet of the Prius, and, you know, then all of a sudden, like, they take off. You know, they're at Thunder Road, and I can't pass them. And a very astute listener called and let Danny McGivergan, our director, know that, hey, dude, that's too close to the car in front of you. And he is absolutely right. First of all, I should have said I'm now in the passing lane within 200 feet of this Prius, and then they speed up and I can't get past them. But it does bring up the idea of tailgating and leaving the necessary amount of room. It's not just a hindrance to the person in front of you who's now worried that you are right on their tail. But if somebody has to stop short, you do not have enough time to stop and avoid hitting that car in front of you. So I applaud the person who listened very astutely to what I said, maybe a little bit too flippantly. And thank you for putting me in my place. And I also, you know, in my own defense, I'm over there in the passing lane by that point. But yeah, point well taken. All right. And okay. So I used to live in Miami, and it's a speedway down there, you know, on the interstates, you know. And what do we have? 75, I-75, I-95. Boy, I can't even remember. But yeah, the Palmetto Expressway. And honest to goodness, if it's not rush hour where, you know, you're slowed to a crawl, it's Thunder Road, except for very senior citizens, very old senior citizens who are driving kind of like our friend Glenn is finding on Vermont roads. You know, they're going 50 in a 65, and everybody else is zipping by at about 75 or 80, and it's a little scary for them. Florida driving is it's especially Miami, South Florida driving. You might as well just be down at Homestead on the NASCAR track down there, because that's what you're going to get. All right. 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And we are talking about anything you want to talk about. But if you've got driving pet peeves, I want to hear them. If you had some celebrity near misses, love to hear them. What else? If you want to put a bug in the ear of Peter Welch, hey, we might get another commemorative Vermont U.S. stamp because of one of our callers from last week. All right, let's see. Where do we go first? We got a couple going on here. All right, we got calls. And who do I take there? Is that Mary? Is Mary ready? Mary looks like she's blinking. All right, well, give me a caller. Put somebody on. Hi, who are you?
Hey, Rick, it's Mary.
It is Mary. All right, Mary. Where are you calling from, Mary?
Randolph Center.
Oh, yeah. I love
Sunny Randolph Center.
Yep. Yeah.
So I just have a commentary. Listen, you know, all week about Green Up Day in Vermont and how successful it was. And, you know, people put so much effort into making their neighborhoods, you know, more beautiful.
Yep.
My thought was, I think it's kind of a sad commentary, though, that so many people still throw trash out the window.
Yeah. Oh, Mary.
And I find that on where I live, you know, I find cigarette butts around my mailbox, and I pick up, you know, different cans of litter off my front lawn. And yeah. So anyway, just a thought.
Don't go away, Mary. Stay with me, Mary. I want to talk to you a little bit here. Mary in Randolph Center. First of all, I don't know exactly where that comes from. I don't know how we have, you know, people who just think it's okay to drop something on the ground or to throw it out their car window, as opposed to just keep it until you get to a receptacle. It just, I don't get it. And I'm glad you brought it up. And the more we bring it up, and the more, I don't know if we shame people, but at least call them out on it and let them know it's not acceptable. It's important because, you know, Green Up Day once a year it's phenomenal right now, but what happens in 3 or 4 months again, right? And we start to see some of the insane things that we're seeing on the roadways. We love this state, and it's beautiful because we keep it clean and because we keep it vibrant. And, rolling tires and throwing cans on Mary's lawn, just not acceptable. Now, Mary, you're from Randolph Center. I read the other day a piece from Mim Herwig. Did you know Mim?
Yes.
Just a treasure there in Randolph Center. I had the opportunity to meet her just once when I was recording a piece about Route 66. Not the Route 66 that goes from Chicago to L.A., but from East Randolph to Randolph, all of 8 miles long, and had the real honor and pleasure to meet Mim. So,
Yes, absolutely. A foundation here in Randolph Center.
Yeah, she really was. Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. I love that I have Danny, the director, and Shayla Connor Shapiro, my producer. She's texted me and said, yeah, okay, the double line thing, it is legal. You can pass in a double line legally. It was designed to get you around farm vehicles. So I just want to send out a note to my friend Glenn in Brookfield, who's also been utilizing this legal loophole. Glenn, just remember, when you do it, and they get pulled over, just say, I thought it was a thresher. And then you'll be all right, man. Just go for it. But remember, it was a thresher that you were behind and you had to get to work. All right. Where are we going next? We're going to Montpelier and Stephen. Hey, Stephen, you are listening. This makes me happy. How are you doing?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm calling on behalf of two beings, myself and my dog, Riley. And we're both all ears waiting to hear, and he especially is waiting to hear about the dog blood bank. So we're very excited about your program this morning.
What kind of dog? Oh, I can see his tail.
He's a Springer.
A Springer. Oh, how
yes,
great.
Yes, he's a Springer Spaniel.
Yep. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad.
So he's right here. My buddy's right here next to me, and we're listening.
Bow wow. I'm so glad you mentioned it the other day. I had never heard of it. The guest who was with me at the time never heard of it. You hadn't. I don't think I found a person yet other than my person, Katie Henderson, and she's from Bev's up in Burlington. And it is
in Burlington. Okay.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. You're going to love hearing this. They're actually in Williston. It's called the Burlington Emergency Veterinary Services. And really interesting what they're doing there. And we're going to learn about dog blood. And she's brilliant. And she's been looking for someone like me who would geek out about this subject to talk about. I can tell she is so pumped. So, Stephen, do not let anything happen to you and Riley until 11 o'clock. You have to stay close to your radio because you spawned this, and we're going to learn all about it. It's really pretty neat. So,
okay. Well, right. You have four ears right here.
and a tail wagon. That's great. All right, take care.
And a tail.
Yep. Okay. A couple more things here as I'm waiting for more calls at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Anybody do the 7 days crossword? So I'm a decent crossword puzzle. New York Times, forget about it. I think that's out of my depth. But I love doing crossword puzzles, and I can handle them pretty well. I do have a crossword pet peeve, but we'll get to that some other day. I used to love New York magazines, and I still do, but Maura Jacobson was the person who would do their crosswords. She inspired me. It was the first time I'd ever paid attention to who was actually creating the crosswords, and because I just loved them so much. They were fun. There was a message or something in it that just kept you really interested instead of just a word here, cross down. Maura Jacobson, great stuff. And I think she retired, and I think she's since passed away. But that really got me going with crosswords were hers. I think there is a father and son team somewhere here in central Vermont who create crosswords. And somebody, if you know who they are, you need to let me know. I'd love to chat with one of them, have them on the show maybe, because there is there's a certain art, there's a skill to creating a crossword. Do you know if you have the grid and if you turn it upside down, it's the exact same? Did you know that about crosswords? Yeah, do that sometime. Take a crossword before you got it all filled in. I use pen. But flip it around, 180 degrees, and it'll look the exact same, except, of course, now the numbers are at the bottom, and you've kind of screwed that up. But all right, so the reason I'm bringing this up is I've really enjoyed, ever since I started doing them, the 7 days crosswords. They have one in every week, and they are outstanding, so kudos to 7 days for that. But the one that's in this week's that came out, yesterday, the title is called Hanging Fruit, and I'm not even going to tell you because you have to kind of figure it out on your own. But this is just crazy fun. The new one from 7 days crossword, it's called Hanging Fruit, and enjoy yourself, knock yourself out. You'll smile kind of when you figure out the little trick to it, and there is a trick to it, so have fun with that. 7 days crossword. All right, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Oh, this is amazing. We've got the deacon, the pontiff on the phone. It's Ken Squire. Hey, Ken Lee.
Well, there's no pontiff here, that's for sure. But you know that idea on the postage stamp?
Yes.
Well, while it's still on our minds these days, I would think that Dean Davis would be very appropriate for a stamp, because he gave to Vermont that whole issue about picking up about ourselves.
Yes, he did.
And that was such a wonderful thing to do, and it's been maintained over a lot of years. It's faltered a little this year, of course, with the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly his heart was in the right place, and he got the thing started, and it was a major success. And it makes a big difference to Vermont. And the other candidate, perhaps, would be our current governor, who all across the United States, the one they say has been the leader in facing this pandemic and doing the right thing time and time and time again, is the stock car driver. What's his name?
That'd be our Mr. Scott. Yes,
yeah,
Phil Scott.
Phil Scott. That's the one.
So I'm not sure that he can appear on a stamp as a sitting politician. There's probably a rule against that. But your heart is in the right place there.
But those are the kind of people that have really done something for Vermont. And Dean Davis was such a great leader when he was there. And Phil seems to be the same.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Dean Davis again, because a couple of weeks ago on a particular show, his name came up several times, and people were relating stories of meeting him, him starting Green Up Day, and I have it on my list of shows that I need to get together. Is a show about Dean Davis, and I'm looking for the right person. People have written in with a couple ideas. I reached out to the Historical Society, and they said there's no Dean Davis historian that they know of, but Nancy Price Graff's name has come up, a few other people, and I have to reach out and try to get that put together for a Dean Davis show. So even if he doesn't get on the stamp, Kenley, I need to honor Dean Davis with a show here on Vermont Viewpoint. So
it'd be a good show.
Yeah,
that's
all right.
For sure.
Hey, thanks
for
checking in. Take care. All right, let's see. It looks like we're going to get one more call in here at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. We'll get Danny to get that in. I do want to mention, I got sent a most beautiful video yesterday. One of my favorite songs. I just have to bring this up. The artist is named Tina Arena. She might be Australian, and she's covering Kate Bush's tune, This Woman's Work. And it reminded me that is probably one of my favorite songs of all time. It's absolutely gorgeous. Am I out of time? How I got? I am out of time. Oh, Bobby and Randolph, I'm so sorry. We got time. Bring Bobby in. I'm sorry. That's my bad. Bobby? What's going on? Got you, Bobby? Bobby, you there? Oh. We'll try one more time. Hey, Bobby. Randolph, Bobby. All right. Well, sounds like Bobby got a little stage fright right at the end here. That's going to wrap it up. We're going to hang up the phones right now, closing bell of opening phones for the week. But we're going to hop out now for CBS News Break. And when we get back, oh, I am so pumped up to learn, and for all of us to learn, about dogs being able to give blood and a blood bank that exists here in Vermont for dog blood. And you're thinking, what is he talking about? This is a thing. And I've got the guest, Katie Henderson, who knows all about it, loves talking about it. She's coming up right after CBS News. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Mother's Day is May 9th, time to celebrate that special woman in your life. Treat her with a card or gift from the almost world-famous Warren store. Our Rockin' Deli will be offering a special grab-and-go meal, or you can wine and dine her at the Pitcher Inn, our sister property across the street. They are offering a special Mother's Day brunch and dinner. Check out our websites, warrenstore.com and pitcherinn.com. Make it a day trip to quaint and beautiful Warren Village. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Open daily, 7:30 to 5.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. All right, stay with me on this one. So up until a couple of days ago, there was one topic that I love to roll out at dinner parties that people really paid attention to when I'd start to blow about it: face blindness or prosopagnosia. There's a researcher at Dartmouth College who's an expert on the topic, and I've interviewed him three times about it, including on this show. So if you're ever at a party and you hear some guy spouting about prosopagnosia, it's either Brad Duchesne, the Dartmouth researcher, or me. And you can tell the difference. I'm more animated, he's more chill, and he's better looking. But then a couple of days ago, Stephen from Montpelier called into this show and asked about giving blood, and then said that he was told his dog could give blood, and did we know anything about it? The guest and I were flummoxed, but I was intrigued. Is this a thing? Because if so, this is my new party topic. This show is like a classroom where you can raise your hand and ask a question, and I can make up an answer, or I can go try and find the truth. And my list of homework assignments is getting longer and longer. But on this one, in the matter of a couple days, I found the person in Vermont who knows all there is to know about doggy blood donations, and she and the subject are fascinating. I've got to take a breath. Katie Henderson is the blood donor coordinator at Burlington Emergency and Veterinary Specialist, or BEVS, in Williston. Oh, my gosh, Katie, I am so glad that you are on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you for that very complimentary introduction.
Now, listeners, if you've got a question about the blood donor program at BEVS, you can give us a call, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. All right, before we get to the blood program, give us an overview, Katie, about BEVS.
Sure. So Burlington Emergency and Veterinary Specialist is a very, very big organization as of right now. We recently, about a couple of years ago, moved into a new facility in Williston, and we treat, you know, cats, dogs, some exotics, but we have a very busy and well-staffed, you know, emergency room with some fantastic nurses and doctors that see all sorts of pet emergencies. We also have specialty services, which include physical therapy, internal medicine, surgery, you know, a lot of really great resources here. So, you know, it's kind of like when you go to your primary care doctor and they say, you know, I'm not really sure what's going on, like, I'm going to refer you to a specialist. Mm-hmm. That's usually us. Or likewise, if you have an emergency in the middle of the night, you call us.
Ah, that's you. All right. Now, Stephen asked the question. I'll put it to you. Can dogs give blood?
Absolutely. Dogs and cats can give blood. We do blood transfusions here, and there are a number of national blood banks as well.
Wow. And you have one, a blood donor program or blood bank. So tell us how that works.
Sure. So we're not we do have a donor program. We don't usually do kind of the big blood bank like you would think with, like, the Red Cross.
Okay.
But what our program does is what can be a really hard resource to get in an emergency situation. And wait lists for stock can be pretty long. And, you know, if you need blood, you need it fast. So our program is designed to help our emergency patients, you know, that come in with, you know, things that, you know, an anemia that really needs to be treated, or, you know, just surgical patients or internal medicine patients, what have you. And our program is designed to have the community, you know, with dogs that, you know, meet the criteria and feel comfortable donating in that environment, come in, get screened, and then come into our donor program, which basically has them give a donation about 4 times a year. We try to space it out with one emergency donation should we need it.
Does a dog have to be, I don't know, a regular client of Bev's to participate in the blood donor program?
No. We've gotten, you know, people in here who have never had to come to see us, which, you know, we always say is good.
But understandably.
Yeah, no, we've had people, you know, from all over just send us applications, which you can find at our website, bevsvt.com, if anybody out there is interested.
Well, I'm sure there are people right now and dogs whose ears are perked up because they had no idea this was a thing. There are certain restrictions or requirements you kind of alluded to for dogs to be donors. So please tell us about those.
Sure. So we like healthy dogs that are between the ages of 1 to 6 years, 55 pounds and over. Up to date on all of their vaccines and are on year-round flea tick and heartworm preventative. We do, so basically kind of a quick overview of what that might look like if you come in for that is, you know, we come, we meet your dog, we ask you a bunch of questions, kind of go over the general outline of the program to make sure that this is something that, you know, the owners and, you know, the dogs themselves do want to do. You know, we don't... we've had, you know, people come in whose dogs are really shy, but the owners really want to have their dog participate, but the dog doesn't. So the dog is a little nervous about that, you know, and we talk to them. We say, you know, part of this is, like, we want to make this a really good experience for the dog. You know, they're the ones who are doing all the work. So we want to make sure that these dogs are happy to be here, you know, so they are dogs that have a good, calm temperament. You know, they're comfortable, you know, lying still for a long time, which sometimes younger, healthy dogs have a difficult time doing because they're very happy. So we kind of go over all of that. And if it's a good fit and they feel comfortable doing that, you know, then we, at that appointment, we'll do full blood work on them, which is really nice because, you know, kind of gives all the owners a good baseline also just for future care. Mm-hmm. And just kind of do a urine analysis and a fecal, you know, kind of all those things that you would do at a yearly vet visit normally. And then, you know, call them with the results of that. And if everything is good, then enroll them in the program.
Oh, I love it. Now, you keep mentioning transfusions. I can guess when a dog mm-hmm. needs blood, maybe when it's in an accident and is maybe losing blood. But when would a dog need an actual transfusion?
Sure. So there's kind of a few factors that would meet that criteria for transfusion. So, and it's also case dependent. So some chronic anemias, so a normal, what we call a packed cell range, which is basically the percentage of red cells in your body. And that goes for any mammal basically, but for dogs and cats, the normal range is usually about 35 to 45. So when, that number gets lower, dogs, you know, become more anemic. If it's a chronic anemia, which means that it's been going on for a long time, sometimes the body can kind of get used to it. So I've seen dogs and cats come in with a packed cell volume of, you know, like 15 to, you know, 20, and they look and act like a normal dog, you know. And so those guys, maybe we would hold off on a transfusion, depending on what the doctor says, of course, until they might need it a little bit more or not, because giving blood to a dog or a cat can also, you know, have side effects too. So we want to make sure that it's the right thing to do. Or, you know, the more kind of common knowledge one is massive loss. So if, you know, there's a dog that was hit by a car or, you know, has like, you know, an artery laceration, some sort of
right.
Really profuse bleed, then you know, that would be something where they're, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I don't know if anybody out there has given blood, you know, but you give blood, you stand up really quick, you're going to feel a little woozy, you know, and before your body has time to kind of acclimate to that. And those dogs and cats have that woozy feeling constantly. So if they're stumbling, they appear weak, their heart rate is elevated, things like that can be indicators that it's time to transfuse.
Do they get a cookie after they give blood? Like humans,
they absolutely get a cookie.
Oh, you're the best, Katie. You're the best. I love it. Hey, so you mentioned 55 pounds or more for a dog to give. So I'm guessing because of the size, it might make a difference as to how much blood they have, which brings up this question. You know, when we give, first of all, we give a pint at a time. How much does a dog give, and how much blood does an actual dog have?
So I would have to look up the exact numbers because it depends on breed. So as everybody who has a dog knows, you know, a Chihuahua is a dog, a Great Dane is a dog, you know, and they're both, you know, in the same family. So it's one, you know, they have different volumes, obviously. So that's why we do ask that our donors are larger, because the standard volume is 450 mils. And that is dogs that are 55 pounds and over can give that without really having any side effects. You know, sometimes the side effects do include, you know, being a little weak. You know, we tell our donors, you know, like, don't go on a hike the same day. But most of the time, our donors have no side effects whatsoever. They're bouncing around, happy, you know, very playful dogs.
Katie, this is the great part. I love this part right now. Do dogs have different kinds of blood like humans, or can one dog get blood from any other dog?
Sure. Dogs actually have over 12 different types of blood. So they have what is basically called the dog erythrocyte antigen, which is DEA. The most common blood types that we're concerned for, kind of overwhelming like blood transfusion stuff, is 1.1. So they're tested for either being 1.1 negative or positive. And kind of like with people, 1.1 negative is considered the universal donor. So we like those dogs because they can give to anybody.
Mm. And so I would imagine now, because there's so many different types of bloods, there's more breeds than types of blood, that can a dog from one breed, I don't know, a Dalmatian, give blood to a Dachshund?
Yes. As long as they are of a compatible match. So the most common, like I said, is DEA 1.1, but there are so many different types. And so Dalmatians actually, they found out a little while ago that Dalmatians have a specific antigen that's associated with their breed called the Dal antigen, which for Dalmatian, I would assume.
Right, sure.
but as long as they are DEA 1.1 negative, that blood can go to the Dachshund.
All right. Let me see. Now, tell me the procedure when a dog comes in that you're going to take blood from.
Sure. So on a donation day, they come in, you know, we do a quick physical exam, make sure that they're still feeling healthy, you know, and just touch base with the owner, make sure that, you know, nothing has happened since the last time we've seen them, that they're still feeling good. Sometimes if a dog... The great thing about this, especially here, you know, we see a lot of really sad cases, you know, sick dogs, you know, and tragically, you know, very terminally ill dogs. But the blood donor program, they're all healthy. So we have these rambunctious, you know, vivacious dogs come in, and it's wonderful for us because we're like, this is a happy dog. I'm going to give it a bunch of cookies and treats and stuff. So sometimes if they're, you know, really rambunctious or just, like, super excited, you know, we do give them, or the owners, you know, can sometimes then give them, like, kind of a little mild sort of relaxer at home. And then they come in, we see how they're doing. We do take a little bit of a blood sample that day just to check what their packed cell volume is. We want to make sure that they have enough to give, basically. And then we go into a quiet room. They lay on their side during this time. That's, I think, probably the hardest thing for all of these happy, you know, very gregarious dogs is that they want to say hi to everybody. So laying still can be a challenge. But then they just basically lay still. The actual procedure takes probably about 10 to 15 minutes. We just trim the hair around their neck. And then while they're laying still, we take the sample from the neck. It goes basically into a special kind of collection system that has a bag full of a certain kind of anticoagulant that collects the blood, make sure that it doesn't clot, feeds the red cells while it's stabilized. You know, we finish up with that. We kind of apply pressure to where we put the needle for about 5 minutes. We let them lay there. And then have them sit up, keep applying pressure, give them cookies. They're usually, like, trying to, you know, jump off the table at this point in time. Right. And then, you know, watch them for a little bit while after that. Usually give them more cookies. And then they go home.
Are there any side effects?
Sometimes, most of the time, our dogs are just fine. They might be a little sleepy the next day, but it's basically like when you give blood as well, you know, you don't want to go out and, you know, play a, you know, soccer game or something.
Right.
So we do recommend that they just kind of have a couch day after. Sometimes they can get a little bit of a rash where we clip the area just because of clippers and, like, different dog skins. Very rarely, and I've never personally seen this or heard of it, but it can be a side effect that, you know, there's a big needle that goes in, and sometimes, you know, it can cut in there, but that's why we also very stress that the dog has to be, you know, still and calm during this. And our donors are fantastic for that.
Katie, how much do you love talking about this?
Quite a bit.
I'm going to guess your friends and coworkers have probably heard this far too much from you. So I get the feeling that you're going to start calling me when there's new medical breakthroughs in this field because, you know, I am totally into this.
I have a lot of information I can give you if you want some reading, and I'm always happy to talk about it.
Is the study still emerging?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Is the study of dog blood, you know, canine blood still emerging?
Mm-hmm.
Are you still learning things?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So I did look up just to see when the first transfusion ever was a lamb to a human in 1667. We've come a long way since then, obviously, and a lot of it has been in the last, you know, 30, 40 years. We've done a lot. You know, we've looked at all of the different dog antigens and all of the different ones that are emerging, how those affect, you know, the longevity of the red cells, the different components in blood like plasma and platelets, and how all those can be used to help our patients. It's very fascinating.
And we have a couple minutes left, and I hate to shortchange the felines, but what about cats? I think you did mention that you can do the same, right, with cats?
Absolutely. So cats also have blood types. Theirs are not quite as complicated. So they have three blood types, A, B, and AB. Cats, however, so dogs are a little bit more forgiving with their blood types. Cats need to have their blood type. They can have pretty drastic transfusion reactions if you give them the wrong blood. Thankfully, most cats are type A.
Wow. This is phenomenal. How long have you been involved with BEVS in doing this, Katie?
So I've been at BEVS for about 12, 13 years now, and I've been involved with the blood program. Started ordering blood, I would say probably about 8 years ago. And then we started the blood program about 3 years ago, and I took it. There was a lady who was here for a little while who pioneered kind of the start of it, Jen, who's amazing. I hope she's listening. Hi, Jen.
You're allowed to give a shout out to Jen.
And I took it over from her there. So I've been involved with it for about two and a half years now.
All right. Katie Henderson is the blood donor coordinator at BEVS in Williston. Their website is bevsvt.com. Katie, I hope I wasn't too fanboy for the past half hour, but this was amazing. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. That was really great. Wow. I learned something really a lot this very day, and I hope all of you have. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is produced by Shayla Connor Shapiro, directed by Danny McGivergan. Our email address is vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Please feel free to suggest topics or guests, especially things that I'm going to learn about for the first time. You can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading the podcast at wdevradio.com. We've got Common Sense Radio coming up next with Bill Sayre. I'm Rick Sengary. I'll meet you back here tomorrow.